All right, we're going to leap straight into our interview now. I've got Rata Gordon in the studio. Morning.
Good morning.
So we've got lots of things to talk about with you. You are going to be playing live and local in a week's time.
That's right.
A week and a day.
Mm-hmm.
Or when I say playing, I'm talking like you're a musician, but you're not a musician. Or are you a musician too?
I'm not a musician too.
You're not
too.
A musician.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, sometimes.
Sometimes.
I have kids that I sing to, but you know.
Oh, that's a different type of audience.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. So what will you be doing at Live and Local next Friday?
I'll be performing some poems.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that you've written?
They are poems that I've written, yes.
Okay. And do poets have genres? Can we say what type of poet you are?
Ugh. That is not a question that I like.
Most musicians don't like to be pegged either.
I think that's the job of other people to decide what kind of poem I am if they want to put me into a genre.
I guess I'm trying to find out kind of what it will be like.
Well, I could give you a taste.
We could do that. Should we give ourselves a few minutes to get into the interview and then
sure.
And then we'll do some poetry.
All right.
Yeah. And I know that you're on with Sandra Tapia, who is playing guitar, because I've seen some videos of her on YouTube, and we think there might be, well, we know there's usually someone else, and we think it might be Widamu, but we're not 100% certain. So that's next Friday, and we'll clarify all that on the radio way before then anyway. Also, you are doing something this weekend, which we should definitely talk about on Sunday.
That's right, yeah. I'm holding an open floor community dance space.
All right, and what's the gist of that? What's that about?
So that's a place where people can come together, move their bodies in community is basically the essence of it. Open floor, it's a practice that's kind of like a moving meditation practice. So there's no words other than my guidance. So I'll kind of guide people into their own bodies, into their own practice. And the kind of fundamental core of the practice is about listening to your own body, following your own movement impulses, and seeing what happens.
Music?
There's music.
There's music, okay.
Yeah, music is an important part of the what's the word? Catalyzing the movement.
Okay, yeah. And you choose your music carefully?
Yes.
For that purpose?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it well-known music or is it specifically not well-known music?
Kind of both, yeah, okay. Depending on what, where we are in the process, what we're exploring. Sometimes the music is kind of in the background, it's more ambient. Sometimes the music is really like pumping and loud and we're getting sweaty and really getting activated in the dance. So it sort of depends on what the intention is in the moment.
Okay, and we should say this is at the old school?
That's right, yeah. It's in the old school and then in the new space upstairs.
Okay, it's on Sunday at
10:30. 10:30 to 12:30, yeah.
Okay, all right. Keep that in the diary, folks. So the purpose of this?
The purpose of it, well, I mean, for me, dance is like incredibly ordinary. You know, we all know what it is to dance, and we all have our own relationship with dance. And it's also like an incredibly deep practice. I feel like there's so much possible on a dance floor, particularly when we're listening to our own bodies and tuning in to our own kind of somatic impulses. So much can happen. So, I mean, this is kind of a taster of the sort of surface level of what we can access in dance. But people, you know, report having very deep experiences on the dance floor when it's held in a particular, with a particular intention.
And the open floor it's not just you doing this here. Like, is this a thing that happens?
Yeah. So I did my training with Open Floor International, and that's an international organization. It was a 3-year training, which is all about using movement as medicine, dance as a healing art.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this seems to be a bit of a theme. I've been looking at your website this morning, and art is therapy, and movement is medicine. A couple of things I wrote down. So
yes.
Definitely a theme running through what you do. What's brought you to there?
That's a good question. I mean, I feel like creativity has always been something that has made me happy, that has brought me joy, and that has brought me home to myself.
Yeah.
And I mean, how long an answer do you want here?
We got time. No, we can go deep if you've got something deep
to
give there.
I mean, I guess my story is that, dance, writing, art were all things that I really enjoyed as a child.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, I found that I couldn't, that I became quite blocked and I didn't want to share anything that I was creating.
Okay.
So like in school, I really loved creative writing. I loved writing for myself, but I was absolutely terrified of sharing anything.
Because you were going to be judged.
Because I was going to be judged by it. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's such a common story that happens in childhoods and, you know, this in school that we feel like, yeah, if I'm making something, it has to be really good and people have to like it.
Yeah.
And so that, so I knew like for a long time that I loved this practice for myself, but it also became something quite loaded for me. And I went off to university. I sort of started to open my eyes to all of the shit that was going on in the world.
What did you go to study at university?
So initially I had a little secret dream that I was going to study creative writing.
Yeah.
But I didn't do it. I got there and I was too scared to even apply for the program.
Wow. Okay.
And so I ended up doing a Bachelor's of Arts in Development Studies and Education. And so I was kind of learning about, you know, the environment and... yeah, just all of the kind of stuff out there that needed attention. And my focus really went out there. I started working in environmental education and community development work, and I really felt like, oh my gosh, there's so much in the world that needs to change. Like, and that became my where I went, what I devoted my life to at that time. And I always had my own kind of secret writing practice going. I was like journaling and, but also just had absolute crippling fear of sharing that with anyone. Like I couldn't even write in the same room as someone because I was, I was too scared.
Okay, that's quite serious. Yeah.
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 But you know, and I danced at parties and that kind of thing, but then I found my way to at some point a Five Rhythms dance class. There was a teacher, Melissa Michaels, who came over from the States, and she was teaching this this practice. Which something happened in that class for me where I just felt, where I just kind of felt like, oh, there are places in this world where I'm allowed to just explore for the sake of it, and I felt a real kind of unlocking, and so I continued to seek out places like that. So I went to other Five Rhythms classes and other spaces where it felt like I was allowed to just create and it didn't have to be for the sake of creating a product, you know, making a show. Doing something that was for something else, something to be sold or something to be...
Because I guess all those things are distractions from the actual creative impulse.
Yeah. And in that process, I mean, over a period of years, I kind of found my way back into my own flow. And I found also this beautiful space where if I was like writing with somebody that I really trusted and I shared it with them, then there was so much more potency in what I was writing, because I wasn't just writing for myself. I was writing for someone else.
Okay.
I was writing to communicate.
Yeah.
And I think it made what I was writing a lot more interesting. And it was really, I really hate the word healing, but I find myself using it a lot. It kind of makes me cringe. But it was really healing for me. It was like I found this way into expressing things that were incredibly true to me and felt like I could also share them and that they would be of service to the people that I shared them with.
How many of us do you think there are that spent a large part of their early adult years or maybe all their adult years trying to find their way back to themselves?
I mean, that's a great question. Yeah.
Do we have an easy statistic here? I know we don't.
100%? I don't know. 99.9%? I don't know. I think people who survive childhood and adolescence with a really strong sense of who they are in the world is, you know, they are very blessed people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you went from not being able to write even if there was someone in the room, you know, to writing poetry and now performing it as well.
Performing it, yeah, I've published a book.
So this is just a slow, continuous journey to that.
Yeah.
It sounds like to me, like just reaching further and further.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. And now, I mean, there is, it's so much fun for me. I find so much joy in sharing my work. And a big part of my work now is creating spaces where people like me, who know that they are secret artists, secret creatives, can feel safe enough to actually dive into that world again and start to experiment with what it's like to share.
So there are so many people who say that, oh no, I'm not creative. You know, there's creative people in the world, but I'm not one of those.
Yeah.
Do you believe that?
Well, I think the key thing is the desire, is that sense of like creativity is something that is, if I'm not doing it, I know that something's wrong, you know? And a lot of us have that sense. I certainly have that sense with writing. Like if I'm not writing in my life, yeah, I get quite tense. And there have been, you know, years where I haven't written. And yeah, it's just always been something inside me where I feel like I know that's something I'm meant to be doing.
Right.
So those are the people that I like to connect to, the people who go, yes, there is something. I do have this little project and I'm not doing it and I want to find my way into it. That's kind of the space that I love to be in, where there's the desire but the fear is getting in the way.
So do you remember the first time you performed some poetry?
I'm
imagining that's a big step, but maybe it wasn't.
I mean, when I first really started writing poetry, I was writing more for the page, and it felt like more, I was more interested in writing so that people could pick up a book and read it, rather than actually performing something live.
Yeah.
And I do remember the first time I got something published. That was very exciting.
Right. Yeah. 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 Yeah, I bet.
And I think possibly the first time I performed poetry was at a party. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's a kind of an easy way to get into it. Not a full on stage. Just a supportive place.
Yeah. And I still have shied away from stages, to be honest. I mean, I see that that's probably somewhere that I'm going to go in the future, is spending more time on stages. But yeah, it's edgy for me still.
Well, Live and Local is a very supportive environment.
Yes, and I have performed at Live and Local before.
You have? Okay,
yeah,
cool. And you're happy to come back. That's a good sign.
Yes, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Well, do you want to do a poem for the audience?
Sure.
I should warn that if you're doing it in my direction, my brain will be half on volume levels and things like that, so I'm not a good audience.
Okay, well, if there's somebody out there this morning that really needs a poem, this is for you.
I'm sure there is. Yeah, yeah. Do you need time to find the...
I've got it here.
Yeah.
So this is a poem that's actually still in progress. So I'm...
Oh, okay.
I'm practicing sharing things that aren't quite done.
Interesting.
This is called... When I say, let yourself play, I mean... When I say, let yourself play, I mean, give yourself a gun and shoot down everyone who ever shamed you with bullets made of marshmallow heaven. I mean, put on oven mitts and pull your shame hot from your body. Let it cool. Let it cool. I mean, strip yourself naked of decency and shove fistfuls of funny under your tit. When I say, let yourself play, I mean, stand on the edge of a precipice like this one, believing you can fly. Lean forward and then crumple backwards into the arms of those who love you. When I say, let yourself play, I mean, stop working so hard. Stop working so hard to be likable. Let your teeth fall out. Let yourself lie. Let yourself lie down at the foot of a surging tree and die. Die there until a loud mob of small insects starts tapping at your imagination and the many winged fragments of you rise together and go make honeycomb.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Rata Gordon with a poem called
When I Say Let Yourself Play.
And now that you've read it on the radio, do you feel like, because you're still developing it, do you feel like you know where you're going next?
There's a whole lot of more stanzas in progress. So more pieces that I'm slowly kind of adding them in, taking things out, going, oh, that one worked, that one didn't, that one feels good to say.
Okay.
Yeah, but it is really nice to have the opportunity to share.
Someone's texted me saying nice imagery.
Great.
So when you work on it, are you changing the words, or you get the words and then you add the next stanza?
So my process is changing all the time. It used to be that I would like write something and then be tinkering with it and trying to make it perfect. More recently, I've discovered a way into the editing process that I find a lot more fun, which is where I have just lots and lots and lots of different versions. So that's where I let myself play in the process, where I go, that kind of worked. I'm going to take out that whole stanza. I'm going to put in a new one. Stanza's a paragraph, by the way, in the poem.
Yeah, right. Got it.
Just kind of finding my way into giving myself permission to play enough with a poem that it can actually transform, rather than feeling like, you know, I wrote it down and it was good or it wasn't good, and so then that's it. That's just life.
That one right there. Yeah.
So I'm really enjoying the process now of kind of letting myself edit and just explore what happens when a poem is allowed to transform and evolve over its lifetime.
And do you wander around the house speaking loudly the poem, or shouting the poem, performing the poem?
It's probably a good idea. I could do more of that. I definitely do that sometimes.
I'm trying to visualize you doing a poem at your house now, like right now, waving your arms dramatically. Yeah, that's just my imagination, though. So healing and art and movement, but also creativity itself seems to be a big deal for you, I think, from the few minutes I spent looking at your website.
Yeah, so I have also trained as an arts therapist.
Yeah.
So I finished my training in 2020, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, and so arts therapy is really about using the arts in specifically kind of psychotherapeutic spaces. And also, you know, it also kind of covers the spaces where you're just doing arts for art's sake, but there's a implicit kind of therapeutic benefit to it. Yeah.
Well, there seems to be with most creative things, I think.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just because it makes us feel good anyway to be doing those things.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much to it, and there's so much kind of science coming out about it now. I don't have a head for that stuff. I just know that I love it, and I've seen the impact that it has on other people. So, but I mean,
it's interesting that there's science proving that art's important.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I see, you know, there's so much emphasis, especially from America, here, get your kids into these STEM areas, which STEM is like science, technology, engineering, medicine. Is that what it stands for? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Yeah. Kids should be getting into this. And that's half of who we are as human beings, is that technical, analytical kind of side of things. But I think there's a lot more. And I was talking to you before about a psychiatrist and writer, Ian McGilchrist, who talks about the difference between the left and the right brain. He wrote a book called The Master and the Emissary, which is the right brain is the master, which has the big picture view, and the left brain is the emissary, who is supposed to work to the master's guidance, but thinks that they're really smart and ends up taking over. This is really paraphrasing a story that he says much better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a kind of a metaphor for our culture at the moment, where the focus on analytical, detailed, technical, scientific stuff is dominant. And we've got very smart scientists and lots of smart science, yet things keep going wrong.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and so somehow we're missing that big picture. And he was... I bring him up because he specifically talks about things like music and poetry as being a way of getting the right brain connected back in again.
Yeah. I really do believe that that's such an important kind of part of our human evolution, you know, right at this moment in history, is that we really need to be opening ourselves up to that part of our intelligence.
Yeah.
And it's an intelligence that comes through when we actually let ourselves explore in an open-ended way, looking at the big picture, like not necessarily knowing where we're going. Not planning out every step of the way and just being part of an emergent kind of process. And I think that, you know, practicing arts as a practice really helps us to develop as intelligent beings. It helps us to be responsive to the world around us rather than just having a plan of how we think things should be and then, you know, bulldoze or roll that out regardless of what the feedback is.
Yeah. And I know they have you heard about those, the things they used to do for people at epileptic fits? They'd cut the corpus callosum, in between the right and left mm-hmm. hemisphere in the brain, and then they could communicate with just one side of the brain, and the left brain, the detail one, would be very convinced it was right about stuff, but saying very quite wrong things.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's where we're at as well, a little bit as a culture. We've got this amazing science. We can do amazing things with science and technology.
Yeah.
But we also keep making things that aren't so good for the planet and aren't so good for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we make them so well.
Yes, we do. And they seem like so much the right thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I guess it's just about harnessing that intelligence in a good way.
Yeah. So you've got kids. You said before you came on the air, you've got family.
Yes, yeah.
So do you think about that sort of thing for them, wanting them to have access to that part of themselves? Or are they already born with it?
They're born with it. I guess it's just about keeping it alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, keeping that, you know, valuing it enough that it's supported and that there's spaces to explore it. Because I think that, you know, going through everyday life, it's just so easy to just get stuck in the analytical place.
Yeah,
And that's why I think that, you know, like spaces like the dance space that I'm holding and, you know, any place where the intention is to not do that, to actually just explore other ways of knowing, they're so valuable right now.
Do you think you'll have to create spaces for your kids for that, or is it going to be so self-evident in the way you're living your life that they'll get the message?
I don't know.
You don't know.
I'll find out.
You'll find out. Yeah. Are they very old yet? Or?
So I have an 11-month-old and a 4.5-year-old.
Okay.
I have two stepkids as well who are a little bit older. Yeah.
Okay, so it's all happening.
Yeah.
You have time to do all this?
I have to. I think that's what I realise is that it's just such an important part of who I am and what I'm here for that I can't not do it. Yeah.
I remember interviewing Sarah Johnson, who's a local author, and I said, do you find time to write? And she said, I can't not write. Yeah. I'll be driving somewhere and I have to stop and write something down that's come into my head. And, you know, she always has something that she can write on with her in case that happens. So, it's not like she has to make time for it.
Yeah.
It makes time for itself.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's a lucky place to be in. And not everybody is there, you know. Not everybody is so in touch with that flow. And I think it's beautiful when we actually access that kind of place where it feels like, yes, absolutely. I've heard it described as like diarrhea, you know.
It's just coming no matter what.
Just have to find your way to the page. And, you know, for those of us who have experienced like feeling disconnected from our own creative flow, it's not necessarily like that all the time. And I do think that there is a place for real intentionality and practice about helping ourselves loosen up to become in touch with that again.
Have you had practice with that? Can you help people with that?
I mean, that's what my whole job is right now.
Right.
Yeah. Aside from my own kind of arts practice, that's what I do. So I do mentoring for people that really want to reconnect with their own creativity.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I just keep thinking that there's a lot of people stuck in that thing of I'm going to be judged or someone's going to mark me for what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And that is such a huge block to creativity.
And it's such a huge shame, you know.
Yeah. And even like given that you're talking about the creativity as healing, that creating a situation in our young people where you're putting a block in the way of them exploring their own creativity, that's setting people up not in a good way, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just capitalism, you know, like that's what it is, that we're set up to think that anything that we do has to be productive, has to make money, has to you know, fit in within the certain
confines. A very specific purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that really just gets in the way of doing things that are actually explorative and different and imaginative, because, you know, if we really let ourselves do that, we don't know if it's going to be successful. We don't know if other people will like it. But I feel like it's so worthwhile, because that's the way into creating anything that is revolutionary, which I think is what we really need right now.
Yeah, yeah. And all those wonderful scientific and technological things that we do like, I mean, they all did come from a creative moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how can we strengthen the muscles, around that?
Yeah.
To let ourselves go there.
Yeah.
To be more available for that inspiration.
So with art therapy training, is that a thing where you counsel people? Is it like a counseling moment, but with art supplies, or?
It can be. Yeah. There's so many different ways that it can be applied. And that's certainly one of the ways that it can be used, is like in psychotherapy and counseling, or in groups spaces. But I guess the training is around like developing sensitivity to what sorts of invitations, provocations, or kind of things generally can you do for people that will help them to open up and access the power of the creative process. And that can be really different in different situations. So it could be a community art project that has the intention of, you know, building community connections.
Yeah.
Or it can be a really individual thing, which is about helping someone work through trauma or something very personal to them.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And do you... When I talked to a counsellor yesterday on the show, Marie Harworth, and she sometimes works with kids, and you always give them something to draw. Like, you can't sit down and counsel a child like you do an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, they draw, and then you talk about that drawing. And as a counsellor, she can see the stuff coming through the drawing that's been expressed. You know, the child isn't with her. They're with her because they've brought her because there's stress in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And so she already knows that, and you can interpret what's coming out of the drawings. Is it kind of like, do you go that deep?
It can be that deep. I think one of the kind of common misconceptions about art therapy is that it's all about making art and then trying to analyze it and trying to find the meaning. And I think that's the part in our culture that's just like, the analytical part is the most important, and that's what we should be trying to get to.
Yes.
And the arts therapy field is a truly amazing field, and there's so much happening in it at the moment. And I guess one of the things that I want to say is that, like, art as therapy, it's kind of about valuing the art for the art's sake, that being in the process of actually just doing it is valuable in itself.
Yeah.
And it can, you know, there can be meanings and new stories and things that come out of that. But it's really rich. I find it kind of hard to talk about, because there's just so many layers that you can explore in the world of.
Is the creativity and being artistic, is that an inherent part of being a human being?
I think it's who we are. I mean, that's what we are, is creativity.
Yeah. Like, I imagine if that's who we are and we're not doing it, then there's art for art's sake, it is for its own sake. The purpose is just to be human. It's like having fun, laughing seems to be inherent to who we are.
Mm.
But if we're very serious people and got things to do, we kind of put all that aside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we get burnt out.
Yes.
Hey folks, we're talking to Rata Gordon, who is playing it live and local next Friday, but sooner on Sunday we've got the open floor dance at the old school at, what was it, 10 in the morning on
10,
Sunday?
10:30 on 10, Sunday.
10:30 on Sunday in the creative space up the back. Who's this for? Who can come along? Who should come along?
Everybody.
Everybody.
That, my vision for this space is that it is a space where everybody, no matter who you are, feels welcome to come and move and be with other people.
So a lot of people are going to feel shy of that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep.
What can you say to encourage people who might be on the verge of thinking they might go but not sure?
What can I say? It's a place where you can enter at whatever level you're at, you know. If you just want to come and kind of do some shuffling in the corner, that's totally fine. If you want
to... shuffling in the corner.
You know, and if you want to come and explore kind of bigger movement, then that's totally fine. If you've trained as a dancer, you're welcome. If you've never done any dance in your life before, you're welcome. If you're young, you're welcome. If you're old, you're welcome. Anybody and everybody is welcome. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you heaps for coming in. Is there a cost with that?
It's $15 cash on the door, but no one is ever turned away for lack of fun, so don't let that stop you.
And we know that Live and Local, which is Friday week, that's Koha entry.